Blog Talk Radio.
Well, the crowd lets you know what they think of it. Now we will wait for the judges. A 48 ties, a 49 win.
Michael Jordan scores 50.
They gave it a 50. They gave Jordan a 50. He defended.
What's going on, guys? This is Arden. Welcome to the first episode of my new basketball podcast, The Snatch Back. This is something I guess I can say has been a long time coming, I guess. I mean, some of you guys may or may not know, but I also do a radio show every Wednesday morning at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time called AST Radio. Huge thanks to those that have been listening to it every week. Thanks to all the guests that have been on the show. I mean, I've been able to interview a lot of great guests, whether they're independent bloggers or journalists or people from, I guess you could say, the mainstream sites like ESPN, Wall Street Journal, Bleacher Report, and Sports Illustrated. And, of course, that show is progressing very well, and I'm investing a lot into it, just like I'm going to do with this podcast. And for me, this podcast is basically another outlet to express my opinions on sports, especially basketball. Just to give you a little background on myself, I mean, man, again, my name is Arden. I'm 21 years old. I'm from Westchester County, New York. We're a county that's not too far from New York City. We're actually very close to New York City. So don't think it's somewhere upstate. We're actually very close to New York City. We're like neighbors. And even though football's been my favorite sport to talk about and to play for going on, I'd probably say 7-8 years, basketball is really my first love, man. I mean, I'm talking going back to the age of 4 years old, you know, basketball has been in my life. And my mom even told me, and I swear to God on everything I love, my mom told me straight up, like, one of my first words that I said was basketball. And growing up, watching basketball, playing basketball, and even though football is my main sport now, still have a very close relationship to basketball because I do a lot of coaching. You know, I just started coaching AAU. Even before that, I've done a lot of training with youth children, middle school children at camps and even with my own private training program. So I have a very close relationship to the game of basketball, and my opinions on it is always growing. I'm always trying to learn new things. And I was one of those kids where growing up, and I actually would like to say this to any young person that's getting into sports or has a major interest in something, and even to adults, man, don't let anybody tell you that just because you didn't live through a certain era that you can't do your research in that era. That's not true. It's a bunch of bull. You know, it's the more knowledge that you can soak up, the better, and it really will help you understand what has happened before you, helps you understand what's happening now and what could happen in the future. That was me growing up, you know. Even at 8-9 years old, I was looking into early 90s basketball, the 80s, the 70s, even going back to the 50s with George Mikan, and trying to soak up this year of the game. And here I am now, you know, talking sports, coaching sports, even been able to cover some basketball with the Westchester Knicks NBA D-League team. And now I'm doing this podcast thing, you know, The Snatchback. And I actually named it The Snatchback because I thought of the great move in basketball. You know, people out there that have handles, shout out to everybody that has great handles out there, you know. There's nothing like that move, man, when you just dribbling the ball, you really in control of your opponent. That's like really the one few times in life that you can control somebody, and then you cross them up, go one way, they go with you, and then you snatch it back on them, and you go the other way. So I call it The Snatch Back for that reason. There's certain things, there's certain ways I'm going to go with podcasts, and then I'm going to go another way, and I'm going to make you come with me. I'm going to wait for you to come with me. And that's just that. That's The Snatch Back. This is your boy. And let's go ahead and get into it. Of course, like many other basketball fans, you know, I'm on Twitter. You can follow me at Arden Sports Talk. And one of the main things talked about on Twitter this week, at least on my timeline, was how could Michael Jordan in his prime play in today's game? Of course, we all know Michael Jordan, the greatest of all time, considered by many that, six-time NBA champion, you know, six-time NBA Finals MVP, five MVPs in the regular season, 10-time scoring champion, multi-time All-Star Game MVP, two Olympic gold medals, and of course, he's the man responsible partaking on most of your money when it comes to sneakers. That Michael Jordan, the billionaire Michael Jordan, 2, 3, 4, 5 when he came to baseball. And it was one of those things where, of course, when it comes to Michael Jordan, or when it comes to basketball period on Twitter, basketball Twitter, the opinions range all over the place, okay? And I gave my opinion on it, and I basically said when you consider everything and you consider Michael when he played, Michael Jordan would average 35-5. And for me personally, I don't think that's a crazy statement. I don't think that's, oh, you giving him too much, you know, love, or you know, you're on his nuts, or that's too low. People that really go out there and say Michael will average 40 to 50, they're absurd. The same way people that think 35-5 is too high or too low, they're absurd. It's the one thing people got to understand, man, is, and it really comes from those who, even though they watch today's game, they're constantly complaining about it. Oh, these guys are soft. You know, there's not a lot of skill in today's game. You can say all of those things. And at times, those things are true. But there's no denying the fact that there is a big, big difference in coaching, preparation, and the athleticism in today's game compared to the 80s. And when you look at the 80s in basketball, what it really was, guys, in terms of, I think, skill and athleticism, much more limited back then than today, you know? And when you think about it from a coach's standpoint, not to say there wasn't good to great coaches, but I think the best coaches back then were probably the coaches who were just the great motivators, you know, like Chuck Daly and things like that, or Pat Riley. Those are guys who were just great motivators, not necessarily great at strategy, but they were great motivators who were able to create a certain image and a certain feelings with their teams. You look at today's games, coaches are very different. You know, you don't have a lot of great motivators, the guys that will scare people. You know, you got a lot of great coaches, good to great coaches, who are just great at coming up with a great strategy, with a great game plan, you know. You know, one in particular, of course, is Greg Popovich. You know, I wouldn't think of Greg Popovich as a good to great motivator or somebody I would be scared of. I think of him as somebody who is very excellent at coming up with a great strategy and putting it into his team and they're executing it, or Rick Carlisle, or a Spoelstra for a couple of years, Tom Thibodeau. Like, there's this coach that you can name over and over who, again, were just great at strategy, you know? And I think another thing that people forget about that is with this strategy also comes the fact that defense is different today. There is zone defense, okay, along with man, and there wasn't zone defense back then. You understand what I'm saying? There wasn't zone defense. And I know people talk about, well, you know, guys back then, they were physical, and they fouled people hard, and they fought, and, you know, they hand checked. Let me tell you something as a person that has played basketball all their life and played on the playgrounds and played on the hardwood floors and have played high school, collegiate, and even professional players one time or two. Physical basketball game, for me personally, is much easier to play than a game filled with athleticism and length and some skill. I'll say it again. A physical basketball game is much easier to play because people that usually play those type of games, they're not very skilled or they're not very athletic. So the one thing that they're trying to do is they're trying to make the game ugly and they're trying to slow down by making it physical, by playing a very physical type of style. But it's easier to adjust to that than compared to a game where you got a ton of athleticism, there's a ton of length, and guys are skilled. Because guess what? You can match a person physically, but if you don't have the athleticism that a particular group of players have, or their length, or their skill, you are going to be exposed badly. And again, I'm speaking as a person that has played the game all their life, that is coaching now. Coaching, playing, I would much rather deal with a physical game than an athletic game filled with length. It's just the way it is. And when you think about today's time, I just spoke about the coaching in terms of great strategists. Then you got to think about the athleticism. Let's keep it real here. Michael Jordan, for as great as an athletic person he was, how many players do you really believe during Jordan's time could match his athleticism? See, you have to think about it, because truth be told, there probably wasn't a lot of players who you could say, well, could match up with Jordan from an athletic standpoint. Look, in today's time, the game is filled with great athletes from the point guard position to the center position. We got guys who are very athletic, who are very strong, who can jump out the building. You understand what I'm saying? So for me, it's you got to think about the athleticism. You got to think about the coaching. You got to think about the rules. So to say Michael Jordan averaging 30 points, 5 rebounds, and 5 assists is crazy, regardless of what you think, I think that's you being a serious homer, a serious, serious homer. And that's also you not giving enough credit and respect to players in today's time, because the game has changed, but honestly, it's changed for the better, because people who really remember watching those games back then, for as much as, yeah, guys were tough and physical and rivalries, okay, but you can't tell me the games back then were much more better to watch. I'm sorry. Those games were ugly at times, okay? And the defense, for as physical as it was, the defense wasn't better than what it was now. And to even prove my point even more, let's look at the amount of shots Michael Jordan took during some of his highest scoring seasons. So let's take, for example, the season Jordan averaged 37 points, and this was in 86-87. Michael Jordan took 27 shots, okay? He took 27 shots per game. Now, he did make 48% of the shots, but still, to average 37, it took him 27 shots. Just think about the next season, 35 a game. It took him 24, 32, 22, 33, 24, 31, 22, 30, 22, 32 points, and 93, 25. Okay, Michael from 87 to his, actually to his first season in Washington, never took fewer than 22 shots a game. Now think about that in comparison with, let's say, a guy like LeBron James, who can get 27 to 30 with just half of those shots. 27 for Mike, LeBron takes him 14. Or 17, 18, depending on the night. So I just think, man, when you consider Mike during his day, and you consider the game back then and the game now, stop acting like it's crazy to say Michael Jordan would average around those stats that I gave, okay? It wouldn't be lower and it wouldn't be higher. Michael would still be Mike. He would do his thing, but the competition, I think, would be much better for him. Less physical, but again, we're talking about a game filled with a lot of athleticism. I think a lot more skill, and the coaches are great at preparing a strategy. I just don't think you can deny that. I really, really don't. And another thing to talk about is, you know, again, mentioning basketball Twitter. When you look at basketball Twitter, it's one of those places where, again, the opinions vary for everybody else. And sometimes great debates or discussions take place, but for the most part, a lot of ignorance. I'm going to keep it real. A lot of ignorance goes on basketball Twitter. I'm going to be honest with you. You got a lot of guys there who basically have the following that they have because of some ignorant comments or trolling or whatever opinion. And basketball Twitter really, really represents the point of how different the game has changed in sports athletes. So imagine Twitter if Michael Jordan would have played, or Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, and Isaiah Thomas. People just thought, well, the media back then or the newspapers were hard. And in some instances, they probably were at times, but they weren't as crazy as today, you know, with basketball Twitter. They weren't as crazy or at times disrespectful or talking about it as much. And I probably shouldn't even just say basketball Twitter. So, I mean, even if you look at sports media as a whole with ESPN and these other television shows and radio shows, the narratives that are created, the storylines that are created are absolutely incredible to just pay attention to. Those type of outlets, they basically represent the fans who truly look at the game from a very, very unique point. Because one of the things that you got to understand about the internet, one of the things that you got to understand, period, is just everybody has the freedom of speech. Everybody has the opportunity to express themselves. But what is really the point of basketball Twitter? Like, what's the point of any type of Twitter on Twitter? I personally, considering that as someone who believes that social media is a very big part of our lives, I disagree with anybody who always goes and says, well, Twitter is just Twitter or the internet is just the internet. No, it's not just the internet. Twitter is not just Twitter. Twitter is life. You know what I'm saying? Internet is life. Like, it's a big part of our lives. You know what I'm saying? Like, when you think about how many things that we learn on these sites, it's no different, in my opinion, than from when our parents or grandparents or whoever got their news from reading the newspaper or from watching the early stages of television and radio, like, in their life, the same way the internet is now with these sites. So I just don't like when people be like, well, Twitter is just Twitter. It's not a big deal. No, it is a big deal, because guess what? You, just like me and everybody else, we're on Twitter all day, at least once every hour, okay? When we think about news, be real. Are we turning on our TV right away? Or are we going on our computer or any other device with technology and we're going on Twitter or we're going on these certain sites? But the one negative, I think, to the basketball Twitter is, I think basketball Twitter is really making a lot of players today unappreciative. Like, they don't appreciate the talent that we're seeing on a regular basis. And that's why I've always said, whether it was on AST Radio or on other platforms that I was given the opportunity to be on, a lot of players today, truth be told, considering how social media, Twitter in particular, is this platform for us to express our opinions and to get in these discussions and in these debates, a lot of players are underappreciated, in my opinion. And they won't be appreciated until they're gone. And I really mean that. I've said LeBron James in particular. He's one of those guys, you know. I think James Harden in particular, just guys who've been playing at a high level, whether it's for some time or a very long time, guys won't get their just due, because we're living in a time where all we want to do is just nitpick at people, and we want to stick with these narratives that don't necessarily make sense, or the perception of a certain player or a certain team, and we're not willing to move past that perception if it's, you know, necessary, you know. So I just look at basketball Twitter. I see some good in there, but I think there's a lot of bad, man. And I think if I had any message for basketball Twitter, which is you can have your opinion, you can express it, but we just need to be more respectful, man. And we just need to not only appreciate the players and the teams, but we need to appreciate everybody's opinions. You know, just because a person has a different opinion than you, you know, it doesn't mean that, hey, that person's wrong or he's dumb, he or she's dumb, and they're not valid to have an opinion. Nah, man, you can't do that, you know. But speaking of basketball Twitter, because we're still going to talk about them, but it's going to lead into another topic, which is, of course, this MVP race. And let me say this actually before I get into this whole thing about the MVP race. Let me say that yours truly was telling people before the season that the MVP race was wide open. I swear to God on everything I love. I was telling people that the MVP race was wide open and that anybody could win it, okay? People beforehand were telling me, oh, I'm reading comments online, oh, the MVP race is going to be wrapped up, it's going to be between LeBron and KD. I'm telling folks, nah, that's not the way it is. I kept trying to tell folks, I'm like, LeBron's probably not going to win the MVP back in Cleveland this year. Kevin Durant with the injury, I'm like, yeah, that's going to hurt him a bit. I'm like, the race is open. And when you fast forward to what it is now, it's been very fun to watch. But what I'm going to talk about with the MVP race, it's not about, well, who's going to win it and why. It's a matter of people's definition of the MVP award. Because I think with people's opinion on the MVP award, I'm not going to say, oh, it's wrong. I would just like to say it's incomplete in a sense, or there isn't enough context behind it. Because you see some people on Twitter, when they talk about the MVP award, it goes, well, it goes to the best player on the best team. Okay, if that was the case, then how come we have had this discussion on who's going to win the award every day, every week, every month? Well, Arden, what are you talking about? Well, you just told this person or me, if we're talking, that the MVP race always goes to the best player on the best team. So if that was the case, then how come this race hasn't been declared over and Stephen Curry hasn't been declared the winner?
but no, it's not even like that. No, you tell me. I have a problem with that definition because, like I said before, even if it's true in a sense, okay, yes, the best player gets the best gets the award, or the best player in the best team gets the award, it doesn't give enough context. And it doesn't prove that, because every year, outside of maybe a few, we have these intense MVP discussions. If the best player on the best team wins the award, then how come some of you out there were saying Russell Westbrook should be the MVP? If the best player on the best team truly gets the award, then how come you guys were giving James Harden love? Or the small group that was considering LeBron James as MVP? Because, you know why? Because the best player on the best team explanation for the award is not true. It's incomplete. For me personally, before you go, well, Arden, you tell me, what's your definition of the MVP award? For me, my definition of the award has always been the player whose individual success has translated to the best team success. That's like my main thing. So you could go say, well, doesn't that mean you also agree with the best player on the best team logic? Yeah, but that's not only it. My thing is, it's not only about that, but it's also about the fact that when I'm watching a player play and I'm seeing him out there with his team, I can truly see his value that goes beyond numbers. See, that's the thing. You guys be stuck on numbers. That's why you guys would say, well, the award is given to the best player on the best team or the player who's averaging these best stats. To me, what really makes the MVP is when I watch that player play and I see what he does for his team on both sides of the ball. And that's his value, and seeing how, okay, when his team doesn't have his services, they're not at the same level. That's why, ladies and gentlemen, the MVP award is the acronym for most. I even said it during the NFL season when people were saying, oh, J.J. Watt should win the award. It's the most valuable player award. It's not the best player in the league award. It's not the most outstanding player, okay? It's the most valuable player. It's the player whose success or who is so valuable to his team that his team wouldn't have achieved that type of success without him, that you can prove with numbers, and most importantly, that you can prove with his style of play. You know what I'm saying? Like, Russell Westbrook, outstanding numbers. The triple doubles are incredible. But I'm not going to give a man the MVP award just because he's keeping his team in that eighth spot, okay? Or even with the numbers, you still have him watching and you go, well, what is he doing for his team? I'm more about the individual who does something for his team. That's why, for me personally, I looked at Steph Curry as MVP, or I've been trying to tell people that LeBron has a case for MVP. It's even crazy with LeBron, because if there was any other player besides him, people would be like, yo, he's averaging 25-7-5, and his team without him went a game below 500, and then he came back and he brought them to the second seed in their conference. But because it's LeBron, it's a down year or whatever. LeBron's numbers are not going to pop out, just like Steph's numbers aren't, quote-unquote, popping out. But it goes beyond the numbers for guys like them, okay? They're not going to get the triple-doubles every night like Westbrook or drop 40 to 50 like Harden. It's about the fact that when you're watching them play, you're seeing the true meaning of an MVP award winner in terms of that value, okay? Like, that to me is what really represents the MVP award. That's why, like I said before, people's logic on the award is very incomplete, because it's not just best player on the best team, okay? Because if it was, again, this race would have been over at least a month ago. We would have been saying Steph's the MVP, when's the press conference form, this, that, and the third, instead of every day, every week, every month, discussing, or in some cases arguing, oh, Westbrook's MVP, no, Harden's MVP, no, Steph's MVP, no, LeBron's MVP, no, if healthy, Anthony Davis is MVP, or Chris Paul's MVP. Wait, no, that's not the point of the award. It's, again, the most valuable player award. I'm going to keep it real. For me personally, I think my definition of the award is very correct. I truly do. I don't see how you can look at my award and go, Well, look at my definition of the award and go, well, I think yours is incomplete or wrong. How? It covers what really needs to be done for the MVP. A player whose individual success, good to great, translated to great team success. And how his value to the team translates beyond numbers. You can see it on the court. How is that hard? I don't think it's necessarily that hard at all to understand. You know, you got people out there that are looking at the MVP award and thinking of it as the most outstanding player award. And again, it's not. It's not most outstanding player. It's not best player in the league. It's not just the individual award focused solely on the individual, like the Heisman Trophy award. That's the Heisman Trophy, okay? That's like, it's like those awards, you know, the award that's really an individual award that's for the individual. The MVP awards in sports, professional sports, will always be an individual award that has a huge emphasis on team, about what that player has done for the team. And before I move on from it, it goes back to what I've always said. You have a lot of outstanding players, but not everybody is valuable. Please understand that. And to clarify on that more, that doesn't mean I'm saying, well, this player isn't valuable in a way. No, you got players who are valuable, but they're more outstanding than they are valuable. And you got players who are the ones who are really valuable. They're also outstanding, but you just look at them and you just go, man, something happens to him. This team's going to miss him because he's very valuable. Kevin Durant is valuable. LeBron James is valuable. Steph Curry, James Harden and them boys, they're valuable. A lot of players are just outstanding. Russell Westbrook's an outstanding player. Okay? You can say, well, without West, they're not in the playoffs. Okay, again, you're talking about AC. Okay? You're talking about AC. All right? And even if they're not even guaranteed, they were, what was it, a game and a half up on New Orleans? Now that it's a half game. Durant last year without Westbrook for close to half of the season, I believe, took them boys to the top seed, or what, the second seed in the West? 59-23. That's something. Okay, again, if you got a lot of players who are outstanding, great, but not everybody's valuable. Please, you know, remember that. Please understand that. But before I close this podcast, let me just say I'm extremely happy because Paul George, number 13, PG-13, he's coming back on Sunday evening to face the Miami Heat, which I'm going to try to watch that game, actually. Like, I'm being dead serious. Like, I'm actually going to try to watch that game because that's going to, you know, affect, again, the bottom half of the Eastern Conference playoff race. Say what you want, all the Eastern 500, below 500. Look, I could care less about your fit. All right? It's going to affect it because when you look at Indiana right now, Indiana's currently a game and a half back of Miami for the eighth spot. Miami is only a half game up on Boston. Brooklyn, shout out to the Brooklyn Nets and the Brooklyn Nets fans. Shout out to Brooke Lopez, by the way, man. Brooke Lopez has been big time. And he's playing like a man that's really trying to get that paycheck this summer. And let me tell you something, Brooke. I can't blame you. So tomorrow's game between Indiana and Miami is going to be interesting. And I know he's not going to come out the gate and play 40 minutes. But still, it's great to have him back, man. This is a guy who before the injury and still after was on his way, is on his way to being one of the more primary players in the NBA today. So, you know, I'm just very happy to see him back on the court. But, yeah, man, it's going to make the Eastern Conference playoff race a lot more interesting. It really is, just because of the fact that, again, it's going to make it more interesting. You got Indiana getting their guy back, so it could fuel them to make that postseason run to try to get in. You got Brooklyn trying to stay afloat. You got Miami. I actually got to get an update on D-Wade's injury. I got to see how his injury is doing that he suffered against Cleveland. But other than that, man, that's the first episode of the Snatchback. Thank you for those that listened or are listening right now. Please follow me on Twitter at Arden Sports Talk. My Tumblr is in the description below. And again, man, expect this every week. You know, I'm basically going to record this like every Saturday and then give it to you guys like on Sunday morning. I know good well that you guys aren't doing anything on Sunday morning, unless you're in church praising the Lord. I'm out. Enjoy March Madness. Enjoy the rest of the NBA regular season. I'll talk to you guys next week. Peace.